Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California and in parallel from the Turf's Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
And a pleasant good evening to everybody across the world. I'm your host, Rob Starr, along with the other wonderful host, Mr. Chris Davey. And Chris, how are you doing out in California? Is it hot? Because it's 116 here.
It's toasty. We got to about 104 today when I left. And as you know, Rob, this is kind of the first week where everybody's back at work, right? So my standard line has been, hey, how you doing? Hey, you smell pretty good. Is that Purell you're wearing?
Yeah, you know, those companies who made hand sanitizers must have made a big dollar amount in the last year, the last 15 months. That and the people who make masks. So everything's calming down. Everything's calming down in California.
Yeah, pretty much, right? So we're looking to ditch the mask here. You know, pretty soon. So, hey, we'll see. You know the old saying, buddy, you can't spell S-P-E-L, you can't spell virus without you and I.
That's true. That's a truism.
Clever.
Well, let's welcome our wonderful person that we deal with every week and who we love a lot. It's Ms. Chris Austin, who's the purveyor of Maven's Notebook. Everything you ever want to know about California water news, she's the person to do it. Chris, welcome, and how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing okay, guys. How are you guys doing?
Awesome!
Now, for our listening folks, I got to clarify why there was a pause. Because every week when Chris comes out and says that, I don't know if Chris is going to start to say something or I'm going to start to say something. So we're both waiting for each other to say something. So I said before the show, Chris, go ahead and do it first. But he didn't, so. Well, he went first, but he paused.
Oh, but you know, the colloquial phrase she uses is, how y'all doing? All, y'all is singular. All y'all is plural.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, I'm not up on my Texan. I got to brush up on that. How all y'all doing? Okay.
There
I like
go.
Y'all. Well, I mean, that's a very handy word. No.
Well, we came up with an idea how we can all see each other by going to this program called Teams, and we can dial in and do the audio, but it will also have the video of all three of us. So that'll be a good thing, so we can all wave into each other and point, you know, who goes next and so forth. So that'll help the lack of words going through. You know, radio is the one place you don't want to have a lapse of no voices or music or anything. So Chris, except in my head, I guess. That's what my wife tells me. But tell me what's happening more with the drought, because I can tell you out here in Arizona, it's getting bad as well. And they're looking at putting some pretty big sanctions out over the next couple of weeks. And there's some amazing fires here that are happening. So that's another issue. So what's happening in California?
Yeah, our reservoirs are in bad shape, and there's a lot of restrictions and a lot of discussion of restrictions going on in other areas of the state, but not really in Southern California. And this is because when you have a large agency like Metropolitan, and they are in charge of acquiring water for millions of people, they don't mess up, and they, you know, when they had the chance, they put a lot of water into storage, and so actually, we went into this year, Metropolitan had a record amount of water in storage. So while there is discussion down here in Southern California of drought and, you know, and to be careful with your water use, I don't think we're going to see restrictions in many parts of Southern California. One of the exceptions is actually Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, which is in the Calabasas area, and that's an area that is 100% dependent on imported water supplies. They have no groundwater in that area to mineralize. Not enough of it can't be used. So there I think, well, in Southern California, we might see pockets of areas that will be affected. But for the most part, Southern California is going to sit this one out. But not the case in Northern California. The two real hot spot areas of the drought seem to be mainly in the Russian River area, Sonoma, Napa County. This is an area that depends completely on what Mother Nature gives them. They don't get imported water from anywhere, and Mother Nature didn't give them very much this year. And they're really struggling there. They can't take much water. Farmers pretty much getting cut off. And they're trying to figure out how they're going to deal with it, but they've got some really big problems. Another area that's having some really big problems is San Jose, Santa Clara area, Santa Clara County there on the East Bay. They had a reservoir, Anderson Reservoir, there in the Bay Area that was found to have some big seismic issues, and so they were ordered to repair the dam. Now, everything that happens on really, really big infrastructure projects, such as dams, takes multiple years, even up to a decade, sometimes 15 years to accomplish. There's a lot of design, permitting, testing, all sorts of things that have to go on. And as it so happens, they got to the point where they're ready to start construction on on seismic retrofits to the dam, and so they've had to drain the dam now completely. They were allowed for many years to just not have very much water in that dam, but they had to drain it completely so that they could complete the repairs on the dam. And they did that, of course, last fall. And so here we are now in a drought situation. The Silicon Valley, the San Jose area, they get imported water and groundwater, and so they have some supplies, but they're very highly restricted there. Their major reservoir is empty and not in service at this time, and their imported supplies are cut so drastically. So it's going to be a really tough year in the Bay Area, tough summer. Southern California, not so much for now, but that's never an excuse to be wasteful with your water.
No, not at all. So, well, I also heard that in the Central Valley, where Senator Hurtado was tag-teaming up with a congressman about that they want to allow the Central Valley, the water agencies, to have more say in what's going to happen. I guess they're reducing their water or cutting it off for the farmers, and that's a lot of economics going to be lost.
Yeah, it's, the real tough part of it this year is that there's just not a lot of water, and the farmers are really getting hammered. There have been years past where, people might say, well, take it from the farmers, and maybe the farmers were actually getting water. But a lot of farmers have been told that there's no water for them this year, no water that they can take from streams and rivers as they usually might do. There is groundwater, but we now have groundwater management here in the state of California, and so they're not going to be able to use groundwater in an unlimited fashion. It's really kind of all coming together as sort of that perfect storm of misery. We're coming into fire season, and we have low reservoirs, and, it's going to be a tough year, I think, to be here in California and to be in the West. I mean, we're certainly not alone, as, down there in Arizona, Rob.
No. Well, they just had Pat Mulroy down here the other day talking. She's the former GM for Southern Nevada Water, and she was down here the other day talking about the. She's a big advocate about the Colorado River, and she says we need to do something because it's going to get really, really bad.
Yeah, I'm afraid this is sort of when everything, you know, that we haven't done so well for the past many, many decades is all sort of, you know, coming home to roost. The problems that we have here in California, and we're not just limited to us, there's groundwater depletion all over the United States. You know, the Ogallala Aquifer, which is under seven Midwestern states, is you know, they're draining. It's getting drained. It's not being used sustainably. You know, groundwater problems are, you know, that no, they're all over the place. You know, the drought, it's more than just California. It's all over the place. And, you know, it's just all sort of setting up to be a really tough year. However, there is a bit of what I think is a bit of bright news today, and that is that the Klamath Dams got approval from FERC to move forward now on the removal of those four dams, the four lower Klamath River dams. And again, just so we're all on the same page, these are hydropower dams only. They do not supply water for a city. They don't supply irrigation water for a farm. They have only been put on this river to provide hydropower. And they were built, 100 years ago, a long time ago. I think it's 100 to 75 years ago. They're not all old dams, but they are very old. And they're not exactly the most efficient at generating the hydropower. And the hydropower that they generate goes into the cities in Oregon, so it means that these are power lines that cross forested areas. So there's a fire risk with having these energized lines that are producing not such, you know, abundance amount of hydropower, and these dams are causing enormous problems on the river, especially for salmon. You know, the salmon can't get past the dams, and these dams were built without any fish passage, so that's an issue. And the dams also, for decades, have been, you know, having problems with algae blooms behind them in the reservoirs. The Klamath dams were, you know, having algae blooms before it became all the fashionable rage. Now everybody all over the planet has algae blooms. They've been dealing with them for at least 10 years, at least maybe longer. So we have a set of dams, and I think for the most part, most people are on board with taking out the dams, but there are people that are against it. And the reasons that I've sort of seen why they're against it seem to be more centered on economics. Like, the dams are located in a very rural area of Northern California and Southern Oregon. And rural areas, the rural counties here in California generally are not well financed. And so the counties got money for these dams, substantial amounts of money that the owners of the dam paid to the counties, and that was money that they used to fund their school because they needed money. So I do believe they have reached some sort of settlement with the cities, at least most of them, to sort of and the counties to replace some of that income. I think the only ones that are kind of getting left out probably are the homeowners that have homes around these reservoirs that will no longer be in existence. Again, it's all economic, and who's to say that the, you know, homes would really lose value unless you had a pier there or something. But, you know, mountain areas are still nice places. But that's the crowd that's probably really going to suffer, and they may not be getting much relief. But the truth is, these are old dams. They're ready to come down. They're blocking fish passage, and they're causing water quality problems. And so they're, you know, I do believe it looks like there's late, that this is the last permitting hurdle that they had to get across. Now, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. They have a plan. They have these four dams in sequence, right, going down the river. And so their plan is to punch holes in these dams and hope that the next year that comes along is a really wet year and have the force of the water flowing down the river finish the job and take the sediment down, because there's going to be a lot of sediment in the river. So that's their plan on how they were going to do that. So if they had gotten the permits together, they were hoping to start this like this year, like 2020. And it's a good thing that it didn't happen, because this would not have been the year with the drought and no flows in the river. So hopefully next year will be a bigger year hydrologically, and they can get, you know, their plan can work for them. But it's a big move. Four dams. This is going to be the largest dam removal in history.
Well, Chris and I, a couple of months back, interviewed some gentleman from Georgia Water for New Orleans, and he was telling us about how old their generating hydro plants are and how old the equipment is and what it's going to cost to renew it and all that. So that's a big deal. Chris, why don't you jump on in and have a little at the other Chris.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I mean, just looking at the research and reading on this as I've done, I read the Herald article just earlier today about that. Just looking at the history, I mean, those four dams started more than 100 years ago, right? 1918. And,
yeah,
you know,
they're very
small
old.
Little hydroelectric generating capabilities to them, which today are far underserved. The community. So, of course, you're going to have your, you know, opponents and those that think that it's a, you know, it's a waste of resources and why should you destroy an investment and all that sort of stuff. But I think, you know, probably from researching and clicking on the links and going to other different places, it's probably a good thing. I mean, that's what I got. That's what my final take was from it, Chris, is it's probably for the better and not for the worse.
Then, you know, although I do not take a position, and so this should never be construed as taking a position because I don't take a position, but I do kind of think that this is a good thing and that these dams do need to go, which should not be construed as taking a position.
Understood.
Yeah.
Sign here.
Well, Chris, are you saddened that, you know, this final Sacramento River run thing, it could kill 88% of the endangered salmon? That's less fishing for you.
Oh, man, it's some gnarly, you know, it's just endangered salmon that live in the Sacramento River, and they really got hammered in the last drought, and, you know, here it comes again. The most important thing is that the salmon build their nest underneath. It's below Shasta Dam. I actually think technically it's below Keswick Dam, if you looked at the structure, but let's just say, for argument's sake, below Shasta Dam. And they have to keep the river temperature at a certain, you know, cold enough, because the salmon are cold water species. And they actually have a special thing in Shasta Dam that releases water at different levels so that they can meet the temperature requirements to keep the salmon alive. But if you don't have a lot of water in the reservoir, it's hard to release it. And so they have to come up with this plan, and there's just a lot of argument over it. There is, you know, the Bureau of Reclamation, which is the feds, who are still operating under the Trump rules. Those rules are being reviewed, but for right now, they're still in force. And the Trump rules were a little bit less cautious with this issue about the salmon below the river. And the State Water Board, who wants more stringent, and the water contract, actors who, you know, have their idea with how the water should be managed, and the environmentalists who are very worried about the salmon. I mean, it's just a mess. I couldn't even tell you. Because when they get in and argue about these things, it's really hard for anyone who's not familiar with the technical things that they're talking about to really understand. But it's just very bad. And it's very sad that, you know, these salmon, they're in danger, and it's just not looking good. It's just not looking good anywhere. And
well, I think we should mm-hmm. some bears over to there, and because, you know, they like salmon, and at least give them some food at the bottom of the Shasta thing. But I got another question to ask. We'll change the subject here with just a few minutes left. You know, both you, Chris, you've been hearing about the hacks of the Colonial Pipeline back east, and you heard about the meat company that got hacked. And now I understand, Chris, maybe you can tell us a little more about the suspected hack with Metropolitan Water District in California. They think the Chinese. Yeah, you tell us what you know about that. And I'm just worried. I was going to then ask both of you, how do you see the U.S. being saved from getting hacked from all our networks? You know, if they shut the electric down, that shuts the banks down, the gasoline stations. I mean, I think we're pretty vulnerable. But what do you guys think?
Oh, I think, in unfortunately, incredibly so. I think that, you know, most of these water agencies are public agencies, and they can't just raise their rates because they want to. And they raise their rates, and people argue with them. And, you know, kind of with the state employees, too, it's not a really popular line item for taxpayers to say, hey, we're getting a whole brand new computer network, going to be so fast, going to be so secure, going to cost us millions of dollars. You know, taxpayers, it's not a favorite thing. Infrastructure improves, not a favorite thing. But so what we have is we have a lot of utilities using really kind of old stuff. Even the government uses a lot of old computer stuff, old computer technologies that are very easy to exploit and get in if you have any sort of talent for it. And I think, you know, it's a big problem. I don't know.
I wonder, Chris. Are they still running DOS, Mr. Davey?
No, I don't think they are, right? I'm not as big a proponent. I mean, I don't have the, you know, doomsday, chicken little, sky is falling kind of outlook for that. As I know several friends, colleagues that are in the information technology industry, is the vulnerability there? Yeah, certainly. But so are the resources to, you know, to deal with it when it happens. I'm not saying that it, you know, that it's a, you know, that they have to save all and end all to fix it, because all of us know we're not in that sort of circumstance. Otherwise, we wouldn't see these things on the news, read them in the newspaper. But, I don't know if it's kind of the apocalyptic end of the world kind of stuff.
But do you think for the U.S. announcing this all the time, you know, giving, I just heard the president gave a list of stuff not to go hack with Putin. But I mean, it's like, yeah, we tell the people, hey, I guess the U.S. today launched a spy satellite. So why do we do that? Why do we give away the things that we don't want everybody else to know? I just don't get that. But something to think about.
Yeah. Got to run those filters and those firewalls.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. So any last-minute things, Mr. Davey, that you want to ask Ms. Chris Austin?
No, answer my question. I was interested in hearing about, you know, what the California Department of Fish and Wildlife were doing on the San Joaquin River. I know they've got multi-year agreements for certain flows and all that stuff. But Chris, you answered that question without me having to ask it. So appreciate that.
Yeah, they're having a negotiation session for some of those flows today too.
Yeah.
So right. You know.
Yeah, well, that's right. Like a 25-year contract or something like that, aren't they?
Yeah, they're trying to figure out something. I'm not entirely sure if they're asking for more water because of the drought or whatever. I mean, the first announcement a few weeks ago was there won't be any water for San Joaquin River restoration. And then there's like, here's a negotiation session. So, okay. I don't know. It's the mysteries of government at work.
Absolutely. We're coming up to our commercial break, and Chris, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the show and give us the firsthand knowledge of what's happening out in California. For those who listen, please go to www.maidensnotebook.com. That's Chris Austin's blog there. And what's really interesting, you can become a subscriber. You can become a sponsor. It's all tax deductible, too, so that money won't go to waste. But you can get firsthand everything that's happening in California news, and that's where we go first. Yeah, she has it before the newspapers and everybody else has it. I don't know how she gets around California that quick, but she does. So you're an amazing woman, Chris. So we appreciate you coming on the show every week.
All right. Hey, I appreciate talking with you all, people that actually read my blog. Yay!
All right. You have a good week and stay cool, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Good evening, everybody.
Hi, Chris.
All right. We're going to take a little commercial break here from our sponsors, Site One and Weldon, and we'll be back in just a moment with our featured guest. So stick around for the second half.
This is 1050 AM KCAA Loma Linda and 106.5 FM Yucaipa.
Love you, love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, your crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers, and you can get your plants delivered direct even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock, because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aww.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes. A better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
All right, so welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone Show. I hope everybody's having a good day and staying cool these days because the weather's getting really hot. And we have our featured guest coming up. And Mr. Davey, I will turn that over to you to do the introduction.
All right, no problem. Hey, we'd like to welcome a Mr. Mark Daly to the show. So just to give you a little background, Mark Daly works for DLC Resources. They're a landscape management company out in the part of the country that is close to where my co-host Rob Starr lives. So I think Mark's been about 10 years or so with DLC Marks. You can cover that a little bit as we go, but I know that you're recognized as one of the Valley's kind of foremost experts on irrigation, water conservation, irrigation system management, and all that sort of stuff. And I know you've got a lot of experience and a strong background and all of those three-letter acronyms after your name on your business card. So listen, why don't you start us off by telling us, you know, just a little bit about what got you into this business. We like to ask this question, Mark, because there's always a story behind what drew someone into this industry in the beginning. So what's your story, if you will?
All right. Well, good evening.
Hey, Mark.
So my background is, you know, my background is actually in industrial design, believe it or not. And I have a buddy back in college whose dad had a family business, landscape maintenance company and construction and design. And I came on just to help them out during the summers. And, you know, I fell in love with the landscape industry, the green industry, and started designing residential irrigation systems with them, and started, you know, attending some irrigation association classes and some of the ProGreen classes that they had back there in Denver, Colorado, you know, back in the early 2000s. And, yeah, just started getting certification after certification and learning. And, yeah, started designing systems, and just I was hooked.
Well, I tell you, Rob and I are very familiar with the ProGreen Expo every year in Colorado there. I think I've been going to it for 20 plus years or more, and I know Rob's been there several times. So we may have passed in the aisle. I may have even talked to you if you ever came by the booth.
They have. And so that company I was with, you know, they went belly up, unfortunately, back in 2008. And so I kind of had to retool my skill set more towards water management. So, and that's how I came to DLC Resources.
How long's the company been around? I mean, DLC, when did the company get started?
You know, DLC Resources, it's a local only to Phoenix. They've been here for 33 years. And, you know, we're kind of in a niche market. We only do landscape maintenance on large master planned communities. So very large HOAs over, you know, 50 acres and above, basically. And we have only 33 jobs, believe it or not, but we're able to employ about 375 people. So we, you know, we are fully owned, which is great. You know, every employee is eligible to own shares in the company after a year of a vesting period. And yeah, so we're local to Phoenix, and this is where we do business.
Well, the founder, yeah. Jeff Penny, been with the company the whole time, yeah?
He has. He started back in 1989, and he's still with us today. And he's been very instrumental in kind of the direction in the company in terms of, you know, making it an employee-owned company. He saw a lot of value in that. You know, when it's an employee-owned company, you know, we feel that, you know, if you have shares in the company, you kind of take ownership of that, and it helps with employee retention. And, you know, we believe that, you know, whether you're, you know, working in our mechanic in our shops, whether you're landscape labor, it's a career. It really is, just kind of like how I fell into the irrigation side of things. It's really a career, and it's a passion. So, yeah, Jeff was very instrumental in setting that all up.
That's awesome. I know that there's not just one location. There's several locations you have. So tell us a little bit about how you spread out around the metro Phoenix area.
You know, we used to be spread out. We used to have three locations here. And over the last two or three years, we consolidated into one location. So we're here in Central Phoenix, and we do – basically, the large master plan communities that we service are mostly around the periphery of Phoenix. So, you know, we do spread out, and we do, you know, basically use our central location as a hub. But we consolidated about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed, as Chris mentioned, Mark, that you have all these credentials from the Irrigation Association for Certified Landscape Water Manager, Irrigation Designer, Irrigation Contractor, and Landscape Irrigation Auditor. And years ago, when I got into this business, I told my wife about the irrigation. Both Chris and I are members, and so is our company, as you might understand that. You know, I told my wife, you know, I should go and get these things, because my degrees are in electronics and physics, mostly my background. And we wanted, you know, I said, since I'm in this business, I should go get certified. She says, you are certified. I go, what do you mean? She says, you're a certified nut. So I didn't get to do that, but Chris is as well. But so doing these big, large master, I'll keep my day job. I won't do any more jokes. I'm sorry. So anyway, you know, your job with DLC, what do you see as the biggest issues when you come into a facility that you guys have to struggle with? And usually, why do they probably come to you guys? Because they're tired of the guys they got doing it currently, and they want a change. But then when you come in, what do you do with them? How do you set yourself different from the next guy or the old guy?
Yeah, that's, you know, when they do hire us, it's typically because of free things. It's either water bills are too high, you know, or they want to increase their curb appeals is really what it's about. And so when we come into a large job, you know, and you know, some of our jobs are, you know, well over 100-200 acres, and we have you know, multiple water meters, multiple points of connections, controllers. And really what sets us apart, and you know, is mapping, and you know, we help the HOAs, our clients, really understand what they have and help manage their assets. And so, you know, we are really big into mapping. You know, we map you know, all the different irrigation controllers, you know, the brands that they have, you know, which helps for the reserve studies, the number mm-hmm. of stations. But, you know, and then not only that too, but, you know, as far as the water meters are concerned and the water bills, you know, it can get pretty complex. I mean, it's not uncommon where a large HOA will have multiple different types of water sources, you know, whether the water may come from a well or a canal. We have lakes out here, or it could be, the potable water. And, you know, not only is there different classifications of water, but all of these different water sources, you know, they have different costs associated with them. And, you know, to the extent that we can map all of this and really help our clients understand what they have, we can really target, you know, target what they do have, so we could, you know, do different studies for them and you know, help achieve more water savings, and but really target based on the water cost to achieve quicker ROIs.
Well, I'm willing to bet very high that your company does a lot of training to the people that you have, so you have an educated base of workers. But do you find that the management companies and things, people who handle HOAs, do you provide training to them so they understand what a valve is, or explain, you know, what could be the problems when a valve fails? I mean, you go into detail at a key. It could be the diaphragm. There should be dirt in it. Maybe it stays open. Maybe the solenoids. But do you get down into that kind of level so they understand? Because Chris and I, you know, because we work for Toro, you know, we understand our products, but we understand how sometimes they get used or how they get abused. And I know a lot of HOAs and management companies don't understand the intricacies of the components. And when you're trying to explain it to them, they just don't seem to get it. Do you experience that with some of your customers?
Yeah, I think that's where we have generally the most success is the HOAs, where we do a lot of training with them, and you know, it's really about telling the story, and if we can, you know, through data and through collection of data and, you know, collection of issues, you know we can really help establish patterns, you know, of where their system may need improvement. And it really is about education and training them, and to help them understand what the problems are, and then help create a good solution for the future.
Would you say technology in the last 10 years has helped a lot? And what technologies do you think has contributed the most to a successful water efficiency use?
Yeah, you know, I think what's helped us and what's helped our clients the most is we do use, mapping software. We use the GIS Esri platform. And, you know, in terms of collecting not only their assets but their issues, you know, and we're able to explain to them, you know, what their issues are. And, you know, that's really been kind of what separates us and to help them with kind of help problem solve and troubleshoot these issues. But, you know, mapping's been a huge one. And, you know, I think any time that you have a system with central control, you know, obviously helps, you know, makes programming more efficient. You know, anytime that you can program your irrigation system more efficiently, where you know, program the right amount of minutes for healthy plants and turf, goes a long way too. So those are probably the two main, is mapping and programming.
I have one question that I'm going to turn it over to Chris. How is the water situation here? I'll call it a drought coming because it is. How is that affecting keeping a facility, you know, with great curb appeal? How do you play against that?
So, you know, it's about having efficient systems. And, you know, I know we've all been in a drought and water costs are continuing to increase and go up. And, you know, to the extent that you have an efficient irrigation system, you know, goes a long way to help program correctly. And, you know, we haven't really had a whole lot of water restrictions imposed on us yet. I know that, you know, Lake Mead is at extremely low levels now, and the CAP water is getting restricted. It's going to be affecting only, you know, mostly agricultural right now, but looking forward, you know, Arizona Department of Water Resources, which is our state agency here in Arizona, you know, they're looking at implementing some tighter restrictions here coming up in the near future. And so, you know, it's on the forefront of everybody's mind, water conservation. And, you know, we're doing the best to stay out in front of it and do what we can to maintain on the leading edge of that.
Sounds good. Chris, you want to jump on in?
Sure. So is this if I can ask a question, Mark, kind of give a little broader view, if you will, of the services that DLC, I'm sure you concentrate on water management more than anything else, but I know that there's a broader scope of services, right? So it's not just the landscape maintenance that you do, the water management that you do particularly, but there's an arbor management section and you do special projects as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we have multiple divisions within our company. So we do have an arbor division. We have the water management division. We do have a special project division, and we also have a training division too. Because, you know, I think, you know, with the labor market these days, you know, we're really trying to promote employee retention and getting new employees. So we put a lot of emphasis and a lot of investment into our training programs. And so yeah, our main focus is landscape management, but we do a lot of different things underneath DLC.
Mark, are those training resources available just to your employees, or are they available to your clients as well? I mean, you know, you talked about you've got kind of this modus operandi where you focus on larger community associations, stuff like that. Is the training resources that you provide available to them as well?
You know, we do provide quite a bit of training resources to them. And, you know, we have, you know, we're kind of targeted in terms of our, you know, in terms of our in-house training programs. We have a lot of in-house training programs, you know, just specific as to what, you know, the employee is doing and what, you know, what we want, you know, what career path that employee is going down. But in terms of, you know, training for our our clients, you know, we do have a lot of resources available, and they're available on our website too, that people can go to and see. But we do have resources for our clients.
Awesome. We'll give you a chance to talk about that website in a little bit at the end of the show here. But here, how about about this? What's a typical day like for you, Mark? I mean, you know, what do you start at? What would you do? Would you go out and do irrigation audits and you know, what's a typical day?
Well, a typical day for me, I mean, you know, we do only have 33 properties, but you know, we have, not only do we do you know, the repairs of the irrigation system, but you know, we do collect water bills and all these too. So I do have a whole department dedicated to collection of this data and management of that. And so, you know, my typical day kind of revolves around just kind of pointing people in the right direction in terms of you know, making sure that, you know, using the right amount of water. You know, I meet with clients quite a bit to talk about their water usage. You know, in every one of our communities, we do set, you know, water goals that we need to maintain to. And, you know, there's a lot of steps involved in order to maintain those goals to make sure that we're using the right amount of water, no more, no less. You know, in terms of my staff, I mean, we do irrigation inspections. I mean, that's key. If you're going to meet that goal, you know, not only is proper programming critical, but also, you know, doing the repairs on the irrigation system and timely inspections to make sure that all irrigation leaks are caught and accounted for and the system's buttoned up. So just kind of the management of the process is what I do. You know, we have about 25 irrigators on staff. You know, most of them can, you know, program based off of ET. So, you know, it's very important, especially when you have a lot of smart controllers and a lot of technology out there. I mean, it's crazy, you know, the landscape industry over the last 10 or 15 years. You know, not only, you know, do you have to know how to correctly install a sprinkler head too, but, you know, a lot of our irrigation techs have to know, kind of have to have an IT hat too. So, you know, when communication doesn't work correctly. So it's amazing how fast technology is increasing in this industry.
Yeah, the
engineering. I even heard that you guys are pretty successful in setting up what's called a customer portal, where they can report issues, and then you guys track it. Anybody can go into that system, or at least the HOA can go into that system and see, you know, what's been reported, what have you fixed, what have you cleared, and so forth. So that's pretty good feedback to the customers.
Yeah, it's about everybody getting on the same page. And, you know, the clear goal is you know, good water management, programming the right amount. But, again, it goes back to making sure, you know, all those leaks. I mean, irrigation systems break down. And, you know, they have to be maintained. And, you know, to the extent, you know, technology is great, but to the extent that you have more eyes out there that can put that feedback, and we use that customer portal, you know, where people can log in and they can, you know, basically raise their hand per se and say, here, there's a leak over here, and we'll go out and fix it. So, and then everybody sees that, and they can see what the turnaround time is on fixing those leaks. And yeah, it's a great tool.
Yeah, communication is key.
As well as the planter beds and stuff like that. I mean, I guess the question I'm really trying to ask is you know, kind of what's the proportion of sprays and rotors and things like that on turf to drip? And, you know, do you use a lot of drip?
You know what? Our typical property is probably about 10% turf, 90% planting bed. And, you know, I know that, you know, one of our and as far as rotors go and spray heads, I guess it all depends. I mean, it depends on how the community is laid out. You know, we have communities that have pretty much predominantly rotors. And then, you know, some communities have, you know, small streetscapes or tree-lined streets, and you have a lot of pop-ups. So there's a lot more irrigation material in the ground. But, you know, what we do see with the drip, though, you know, developers, you know, over the last 20 years, 30 years, you know, we've seen the popular product to use is polyethylene tubing. And, you know, many of these communities have been in the ground for 10, 15, 20 years. Unfortunately, here in Arizona, that polyethylene tubing, which is a black flexible pipe, drip pipe, it doesn't last in the ground here very long. You know, it probably has a 7 to 10 year shelf life before it really starts breaking down. And so, you know, that's kind of one of the challenges that we have is getting ahead.
You go to PVC then, right?
That's definitely the recommended for Arizona. I know back in Colorado, we used to use the polyethylene quite a bit. We'd even use it on lateral lines for turf. And, you know, in the colder climates, it works great because if it freezes, you know, that polyethylene, there's some give in it, and, you know, it doesn't break. But out in Arizona, it gets brittle, it dries. And it was interesting. We did a drip audit on one of our communities, and we went out and we counted how many drip breaks we had on a particular water meter, and counted 49 drip breaks, and we fixed 100% of them, and we mapped them all, cataloged what type of drip break it was, and the very next week after we completed all the repairs, there was 23 more. So, you know, as soon as the system pressurizes, it's already bad. So.
Well, one of the questions, Chris, and I always like to ask is, from your personal perspective, where do you see the future of water in Arizona, since that's where you're based out of?
Well, with Arizona Department of Water Resources, you know, they are in the process of basically coming up with their fifth and final water management plan. And basically, there's going to be tighter restrictions here in Arizona on basically communities larger than this is HOAs larger than 10 acres of turf. As far as I understand it, the plan hasn't been fully fleshed out yet, but in golf is kind of under the same scenario. You know, they're going to be restricting to how many acres per hole. But you know what? As they continue to finalize these plans, you know, it's going to be, you know, water conservation, you know, it needs to be on everybody's mind. And it will be. I mean, I think we have to adapt. You know, water is the precious resource, and Lake Mead's getting lower. And I think our challenge, you know, as an industry, unfortunately, is labor. And, you know, I think that, you know, myself, you know, I've grown to love this industry and, you know, started off in irrigation design and kind of worked my way up. But I do see a real shortage of irrigation professionals in this industry, you know, water professionals that can program controllers correctly. And, you know, there's, you know, I think technology is great, but I do kind of see it that it's moving faster than the workforce can learn it. And so I see a huge skills gap there. You know, it's exciting because technology is moving so fast and there's some great new technologies coming out. But we just need people to be able to utilize it better.
I agree. And, you know, we're starting to see in the whole water industry what we call the gray wave of people starting to retire. And there's certainly going to be a need for people. And it's good paying, great paying jobs in the water business. So that's important. So how can people get a hold of DLC if they want some expertise in water management and maintenance? How do they find you guys?
Well, they could go to dlcresources.com. And there's some good information there. And you know, I think there's some contact information up there, and that would be a great place to go.
Awesome. Great. Well, Mark, thank you very much for being on the show. Chris and I certainly welcome that. We're coming up against our NBC News hour, and we have to turn it back over to them. And we do appreciate you coming on. And as Chris always tells everybody, and I also try to do that, is everybody to help keep our planet blue. So do that. Mark, thank you very much. Good luck to DLC. And are you going to the IA show?
I'm going to be going this year in person.
We're going to be the official radio station there, and come on down and talk to us. So we appreciate seeing you there.
I will do. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on, Mark.
Thanks.
1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook.